The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America. Streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews in with you on this wonderful day. It is Friday, the 3rd of June, and it is day two of the Memorial Golf Tournament presented by Nationwide and Jack Nicklaus's tournament, otherwise known as. And they're already out on the golf course. We already have a tie for the lead, so we'll give you an update as soon as we get on the air. It is Harold Varner, 4-under through 7 holes as he started his second round after shooting a 68 yesterday. He's 4-under today. He is now tied at 8-under with Dustin Johnson, who had the lead after yesterday's first round. We'll give you more of the leaderboard coming up in just a little bit, but that's already happening as we come on the air. We've got a lot coming your way. We'll be joined by Brendan Sweeney, our good friend with French Lick Resort. He's going to be talking to us. He was at the NCAA Golf Championships in Eugene, Oregon. He'll be talking to us about what he saw out there and the future of golf. There's a lot of the guys there that could well possibly be the next Jordan Spieth. That's where they come from, or a lot of them come from, that are ending up on the PGA Tour. So we'll get an update on what happened in the NCAA men's golf tournament. Also, Terry Kaler will join us. He is the CEO of Hogan Golf. And if you've not heard of Hogan Golf in a while, it's because they've kind of been laying low for a long time. They were purchased and bought out by Callaway and then kind of put on the sidelines, gone through a lot of transformations, but they're back, and Terry wants to bring them back to the preeminence that Ben Hogan started the company decades ago with the goal of making it one of the finest golf manufacturers in the world of golf, and that's what Terry's doing. So Terry Kaler will be joining us to talk about the rebirth, if you will, of Hogan Golf Equipment. So a lot of stuff happening in the world. Frank Bassett with us, as always, in the Nashville studios. And Frank, a lot of things happening yesterday. I don't know if you caught the game one of the NBA Finals, but Golden State beat Cleveland 104-89 to start the best of seven series. And the most telling part of that whole game was that the Splash Brothers, the big guys, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, who normally combine for about 58 points or 67 points, or combined for 20. Combined for 20 points, the lowest combination all year long, and the team still wins very handily by 15 points. So the bench did a phenomenal job for Steve Kerr and Golden State Warriors, and has to make LeBron and Cleveland a little bit concerned, or more than a little, going, wow, we held the big guys to 20 points combined, well under their average. And I mean, Curry by himself averages 30. And we still couldn't beat these guys. And it wasn't like it was a last-second shot that beat us. They beat us by 15. So you got to be concerned if you're a Cleveland Cavalier fan, don't you?
Yeah, just move. Forget it. Goodbye. See ya. I'm out.
The bench
was awesome. What a game.
Yeah. Oh, they were amazing. Yeah, amazing supporting cast at Livingston. All these guys came off the bench and did a phenomenal job for the Golden State Warriors. And both teams deep into their bench. I mean, Golden State used everybody they had. I mean, Rush and Spieth and Clark, guys that you never even see. Yeah, we're all into this game. But yeah, it was a big one. It was a game that, like I said, Livingston had 20 points. Iguodala had 12. Barbosa had 11. A lot of double figures for all these guys. But Curry and Thompson, a combined 8 for 27. 8 for 27 shooting. And they still won handily. So I think, now sometimes those things don't mean anything in the next game. We'll see. Next game will be Sunday night. But again, I think if you're Cleveland, you're going, oh my God, we can't beat them when we knock those two guys pretty much out of the game and we still lose. Not a good sign.
Not good. Not good. A lot going on here in Nashville. I'll tell you that.
There's some bad things happening there, too.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. There was yesterday. Well, number one, the President of the United States was speaking at the commencement exercises of the Air Force Academy. And one of the Thunderbirds did a flyover there, and one of the pilots had to eject. He lived. The Thunderbirds lost a plane yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yesterday afternoon at about 3 o'clock here in Nashville, our air show, the big annual air show is happening this weekend. The Blue Angels fly over downtown. I'm watching them fly, and all of a sudden, one of the Blue Angels goes down. But he didn't eject. He died. So you had the Thunderbirds and the Blue Angels yesterday on both sides of the country have two crashes, one a fatality. So it was really a bad day for that kind of stuff. Just a lot of sadness. And boy, our heart goes out. Our heart and prayers go out.
And then
to the family.
Also a tragedy with Vanderbilt, you were saying.
Vanderbilt baseball player drowned. Well, I don't know if he drowned or was injured. I don't know the whole story about it, but he's dead on one of the lakes last night. And Vanderbilt starts their World Series run, college baseball World
college
Series
baseball.
Run, today. Yeah. So they're talking right now about maybe forfeiting. So yeah, a lot of crazy sad stuff happened in Nashville yesterday. A lot of crazy stuff on the golf course happened yesterday. I mean, let's face it, Phil tried to kill a marshal.
it was a bizarre day in a lot of ways. And as I said before, by the way, Brendan Steele, as we're talking, has birdied the ninth hole, and Brendan Steele now goes to 8 under. So three players: Steele, Varner, and Johnson, all at 8 under. Guys are going low. A lot of moisture. It's been wet. Jason Day played very well yesterday, but this is his home course. You know, people think of the Aussie, and maybe they don't know where he lives, but he lives in Columbus. His wife's from Ohio, and he's a member at Muirfield Village. So it's a very familiar golf course for Jason Day, and you would expect him to do what he did. And he shot at a 6-under 66 yesterday. Jordan Spieth was 2 under on his round, and the other of the big three, Rory McIlroy, 1 under on his opening round. They're still yet to tee off, but guys are starting to go pretty low. But back to what you were talking about on the 15th hole, and I'm watching on TV, Mickelson is playing, and they've got Jack up in the studio, up in the tower, and they're talking to him with Faldo and Gannon, and they're going back and forth on the Golf Channel. And at one point, they're asking Jack about Phil and his swing or something, and he hits a tee shot on 15. And as he's talking and explaining what he thinks about Phil's swing and what's going on, they're following the ball, and it bangs right into the top of the head of a marshal in the rough of 15. And both of the guys, Gannon and Felder, you hear him go, "Oh God, oh my," you know, and then you hear Jack kind of go, "Oh my," like they saw it on the monitor, and they stops talking momentarily while the marshal obviously ducked down, put his hands on his head after it hit him in the head. Well, it bounced from the rough on one side of the fairway all the way through the fairway onto the other rough, into the other rough on the other side of the fairway. It had about 60 yards. And they're kind of going, oh, for a moment or two while you watch the ball. And then Jack just picks right back up and says, "So I think if Phil puts a right hand a little bit lower and he's got a better," he just kept analyzing, like, "We'll move on. I guess the guy's going to be okay." You know, he didn't go down. I didn't see him fall. He just bent over and held his head. I guess he's okay.
No, Phil had a quote in his post-round interview. He said, "The guy's Ali. He didn't go down. He did not go down. If he'd had more hair, the ball would not have careened all the way across and gone into the rough. It would have maybe gone into the left first cut." But, that was a brutal, crazy day. And then McIlroy yesterday talking about his putting. I mean, now he's gone back to his standard grip.
Right.
Won with left hand low, yet he goes back to this grip now.
Yeah,
he said that's enough. I'm going back.
And when we
so
say
a lot,
grip,
of, a lot of
it
crazy
gets confusing.
Stuff.
It's not his putter grip. It's his hand position grip that we're talking
exactly.
about.
Yeah,
it's not
like exactly.
It's not a thick grip or a thinner grip or anything. He had the left hand low, and he won the Irish Open with that in his last outing. You thought, well, that worked pretty well, but he decided, nah, I'm going to go back to right hand low on the putter. And that's what he did. And he shot a 1 under and is in okay shape, but a little bit weird that he would choose to do that after success going the other way. But, he's decided to. So a lot of things happening. All eyes are on this tournament in the golf world because it is a big tournament.
Huge.
It's certainly an honor, if you will, to be playing in Jack's tournament. So I'll go through the leaderboard as they stand right now. As I said, Steele and Varner have already teed off, and both of them are playing very, very well. Varner is 4 under, and Steele 1 under on their rounds today in the second round. So they're both at 8. Dustin Johnson shot a 64 yesterday. He had the first round lead with his 64. Kuchar, Adam Baldwin at 6 under. I'm sorry, Kuchar at 7 under. Then Hadwin and Lee and Jason Day, Emiliano Grillo, David Hearn, John Curran, several other guys at 6 under par. Then you go down to the defending champion, David Lingmuir, also played very well. He's already out on the course today. He finished at 4 under. He's 1 under today as he's through 4 holes, so he's now at 5 under. Phil Mickelson, we were just talking about, shot a 4 under 68 yesterday. He's already on the course as well. He's through 5 holes, and he is even through those 5 holes, so he remains at 4 under par. So a lot of guys have already gotten out on the under the golf course and playing well. The guys who haven't, the ones we were talking about before, Day and Spieth and McIlroy playing in the same group, by the way, And they have not gone off. They'll go off a little bit later on today, and we'll see exactly how they, you know, end up playing. If the weather, the weather's supposed to be fine and good, but they had had some rain, so it had been a wet
soft
course.
Yeah,
in the last, or at least for the first round. So they're scheduled to go off 1:16 is their tee time for McIlroy and Jordan Spieth Eastern time 1:16 against Spieth 2-under and McIlroy 1.
Yeah, they'll turn the big vacuums on. I mean, they're not going to let them go to 20-under in this tournament. It's not going to happen. They've got to harden it up.
And they asked Jack about that. You know, does it bother you if guys are going too low on your golf course? Because a lot of designers, all designers, take pride in their work. And yeah, and they're like, okay, well, I like it to be a challenging course, yet fair. And Jack's point was, you know what? If it's gettable, I have no problem with guys getting my golf course. So he said yesterday it was soft. There wasn't much wind. There's a reason you could get to where Dustin Johnson did and shoot a 64, or Brandon Steele shoot a 65, and the guy shooting 66s. He said, I don't have a problem because I think a good golf course. And, you know, Jack builds golf courses, but he doesn't just build them for championship tour play. He builds golf courses for you, me, and everybody else to play as well. And you have to take that into consideration that, you know, I want the average guy who plays there most of the time to be able to have a good round on this golf course as well. I can't make it so tricked up that only a tour player can break par when they come out here and play. And so he was okay with it. He was all right with the guy shooting it because he said it's gettable today.
Yeah, but I find his courses I find his courses difficult. I mean, for me. There's a course down at Bay Point here in Florida in the Panhandle outside of Panama City. Great golf, beautiful golf course. Love to play it, but it always just beats me up. The Bear Trace, it's here in Tennessee. Tough course. Yeah. Jack builds tough golf courses. One course I've never played that he co-designed with Arnold Palmer there at the World Golf Village, and I think, Tim, we need to make a pilgrimage. That's where our brethren live there at PGA Tour Entertainment. We should go down there and play that course and take Dave Logue out and John Swantek, and I'll take Immelman. He can play with me, and you can play with Logue, and we'll put our producer Bobby Raymond with John Swantek, and then we'll just have a little match, $100 a hole, automatic one down.
It's the only course that the two of them co-designed, is it not?
It is the only course they co-designed. I really want to play that course. Yeah.
Interesting.
Now that we've gotten to that, boy, today on the show you snagged the CEO of Ben Hogan Golf. I'm really interested in hearing that interview because what we talked about earlier in pre-show is with Jordan Spieth hitting a 9-iron or whatever it was on 18 over the green.
Yeah,
and he said, "I've never hit this iron that far," and I said, "I'm a proponent of putting the degree of loft on the clubs," and that's what Hogan's done with this new clubs. So that's going to be cool. I'm looking forward to that interview.
It would be neat. Yeah, they no longer, at least on their clubs, they don't put 9-iron, 8-iron, 7, 6. The numbers you see are the loft, whatever loft is right for you. If your 7-iron is 42, then you have 42. It might be 43, 41, whatever it is. That's the club that you hit, whatever you hit it, 150 yards, 130 yards, 220 if you're a pro, whatever you hit your 7-iron. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll be talking to him in just a little bit.
I love playing with people, too, sidebar to that, when they say, what did you hit there? Oh, I hit a 5-iron, or well, let's say a 9-iron. I hit a 9-iron, you know, 190 yards. Well, when you look at their hand position, they've de-lofted that thing to a 5-iron before they even hit it. And so, you know, just, amateurs, you know.
Well, it's time to take a quick break. We're going to, and we'll come back. We're going to be joined by Brendan Sweeney, give us a little update on what happened at the NCAA Men's Golf Tournament. As we said, a lot of guys, Jordan Spieth just a few years ago, who would have thought? Just a few years ago, he was leading Texas to the national championship, and almost literally overnight, he turns into a superstar and flying around in the private jets and buying new big houses, and the world changes. That's how fast it can happen. And maybe there are some of those guys like Jordan Spieth that are playing in the NCAA. Some very, very good golf. We'll talk to Brendan about that and just kind of get in the NCAA's craw a little bit anyway, because we love doing that here on the show. So stick with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio, and we will be right back. All right, welcome back. Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you here and keeping an eye on what's going on at the Memorial Tournament presented by Nationwide. And they're already out on the golf course. Brendan Steele and Harold Varner have tied First round leader Dustin Johnson at 8-under par. Both Steele and Varner out on the course, and Dustin doesn't go off until about 1:30 Eastern time, so he still has a little bit of a wait here. Probably barely waking up having breakfast at this point. But a guy who's already woken up and had his Jack Daniels breakfast is our very own Brendan Sweeney from French Lick Resort. Brendan, how you doing today?
You know what? Coming off a red eye. So, tell you what, I'm doing great.
I bet you are. Well, and you're coming off a red eye because you were at the NCAA Men's Golf Championship in Eugene, Oregon during this week here. And what you saw was obviously some pretty good golf. And the result was Oregon and Texas in the finals go into three extra holes, and Oregon wins on the third playoff hole. And Fred Funk's son, involved in that, plays at the University of Texas on the losing end. How good of a golf did you see there? I mean, certainly not PJ Tour level, but some pretty darn good golfers at the collegiate level, isn't there?
I tell you what, Tim, it would probably be, as far as excitability, could have been the best 2 days of back-to-back golf I've seen in a long time. I mean, I would almost put it up there Ryder Cup-like. No kidding. It was that exciting to see a hometown team, you know, not only, you know, the 2 days before crown the individual champion in Aaron Weiss. It's a kid, the phenom, sophomore, you know, Southern California guy, goes up to Oregon, you know, on a whim, you know, try to rebuild the program. He wins the individual. And then I was out there to speak with the NCAA about getting championships up the French Lick. So that was my goal. And I think we did well. But, you know, Illinois was playing out there as a bonus for me. You know, I'm buddies with the team. So I followed on Tuesday, Illinois versus Oregon. And Oregon, the day before, defeats LSU, the defending champions. So I'm thinking Illinois is just going to smoke these guys. And it came out fighting and swinging. And the crazy thing about it is it's Oregon's home course. And right. The University of Oregon is literally a mile away from the golf course. That's their home team. Casey Martin lives on the golf course. So these guys are there every day. I met with the GM of the golf course, and he's like, this is the best thing that I think we could ever do. Some of the members weren't too pleased, but the crowds out there, there had to be 3,000 people out there following the semifinal match between Illinois and Oregon. And Illinois hung tough. And, you know, chipped in left and right. It came down to the 18th hole. You know, this Salman Rasha kid, hometown kid from Eugene, you know, goes down with Charlie Danielson to the last hole. He sinks an amazing putt, and Danielson has a, you know, 28-footer that lifts out. Oregon wins, and it sounded like a rock concert. Then the next day, you know, Texas is playing Oregon. Texas, you know, their stud, Bo Hessler, day before rips his shoulder out, so he concedes, and they go neck to neck. And it's absolutely, it was like a rock concert. So yeah, give it up to Oregon. Huge. It was unbelievable. It was not what I was expecting.
I think if I'm not mistaken, Oregon went into the beginning of the tournament, and not just the final round, but the start of, they had both match play and stroke play in the NCAA men's, and they were like seeded 25th or something, pretty far back when all this starts up for them. So nobody really expecting to see the results that we saw. Was it just overachieving by Oregon? Were they underestimated by a lot of people that didn't think they deserved a bit more than a 26 seed?
It was like it's a rocky story. I think it could be one of the best stories in golf this year so far, in my opinion. I mean, it's you know, these kids are fighting for, you know, They're legendary in their own town now. You couldn't set a better stage for what was set this week for the Oregon Ducks. It was truly amazing. And to watch Illinois go, you know, to the end, hey, they got beat, but they got beat by the best. And to see, you know, Texas, who was ranked number one, it's like the eighth consecutive time in the NCAAs that the number one seed got knocked out. But they lose their big guy. Hey, that's part of the game. And that's the other thing, Tim. The NCAA with college golf, you know, they have an injured player, and you can't replace the injured player. So Texas had to concede that round.
Yeah.
So, you know, they already started one down.
And by the way, how do you feel about that? Because certainly if he's a volleyball player, baseball player, football player, you get injured, you replace him. You put another quarterback in. If your quarterback gets hurt, you don't go, oh, well, now you got to play with all running backs. Why would golf be different? Why can't you replace the guy? It seems
I think the third string quarterback, like the kid that's keeping all the notes, the first two quarterbacks go down, he could go jump in the game. I think it's silly that they don't adhere to that. And it's but they don't drop the last, in this match play, they don't drop the last score, the lowest player score, which they do in the other round. So, I don't know. I think it's a goofy rule. It's not my rule. It's the NCAA rule, and it's their championship. So,
in Ryder Cup, again, we're talking with Brendan Sweeney with French Lick Resort. Ryder Cup, you get to replace guys, do you not? President's Cup, if you have an injured player, you get to put somebody else in there to pick up the match. So I don't know. I mean, we can get in the NCAA. There's no end to what we can talk about the NCAA.
No, we better not.
Yeah, we better not.
We're still in the courting stage on my side, so I better be quiet for a while.
So you've seen a lot of professional golf in your life. Could you evaluate these young golfers? And again, Fred Funk's son is playing there. Bo Hessler. Hessler is a really talented player. Obviously, Oregon, Illinois have very talented players. Did you look at some of these guys and think, I'll be watching them PGA Tour in the next few years, down the road a little bit? Maybe not Jordan Spieth-ish, but did you get that feeling?
Well, I tell you, if you have the name Forse, Lim, Rata, Wise, or Yee from the Oregon Ducks in 10 years, if they're all playing on the PGA Tour, I'd be shocked. But I bet there'll be a couple guys will come out. This Rasha kid, he's got a great chance. Aaron Weiss, Taylor Funk, Bo Hessler, look at Illinois, Charlie Danielson, Thomas Dietrich, Nick Hardy. They all have their future in front of them, my man. And in golf, you have the web.com, and then it moves up to the PGA Tour, and there's a lot of guys out there. There's a ton of guys out there that their talent is there. So whatever level they go to. Put it this way, this week, the Oregon Ducks, they played legendary golf, and that was it was so cool just to be there in that environment, just to hear the crowds and the local, the local Oregon people, the Eugenians, they came out in droves. They sank the putt on 18 on Tuesday, and Russell, he left off, the big Oregon Duck chair, and the place went crazy. It was amazing. It was college sports, and it's the finest in amateur sports, and you'll never see a hometown team win the national championship on their hometown course, win the individual championship. I think in 1945, Ohio State had the individual on the team. That was the last time that happened. But to have it happen in their backyard, on their track, I think that's a once-in-a-lifetimer that we'll see.
Eugenians, by the way, Brendan, you made that word up, so I'm going to call you on that one.
I thought Eugenians they found in a bottle. So,
Eugenites? Would they be Eugenites? And before I let you go, let me ask you this: you're there to try to get some college golf action at French Lick, your fine resort there in southern Indiana. If it does happen, is it like everything else? Are you talking like 5, 6, 8, 10 years down the road, or is it just right around the corner that you might be able to get some event there?
We're looking at 18, 19, 20. It's that close. Okay. And next year it's going to be at Rich Harvest Farms in Chicago. Northern Illinois University will be the host site there. But I tell you what, that's the first time I've ever been to Oregon. It's a beautiful state. And to top it off, I went and had lunch with a buddy. I flew out of Portland, and I had an old buddy, Mike Moore, up there, and we tried to hook up for lunch, and he said, hey, man, we got to rearrange my plans. I have to go to traffic court. So I'm like, hey, I'm going to court with you. So I went to traffic court in downtown Portland yesterday. That was a freak show. It was amazing. There's people.
And what would you call people from Portland?
A lot of them call freaks. They're out there.
Portlandians.
Portlanders. Okay. It was. I tell you what. I've been in traffic court in a couple of in Florida. I've been in there in Illinois. The same stupid people show up at traffic court no matter where you go. I think it's an international code.
So, it's the same people. They move around. They follow you. Well, it sounds like you had a pretty good time. And obviously, Oregon had a very, very good time. So congratulations to Oregon. Tough year for Texas. Tough loss for Longhorns. Maybe we'll start some talk about changing the rules because, why not play full strength? You can't. mean, lose a guy and not be able to fill in, it seems like it's a kind of an unfair advantage for the other team. But maybe we'll start some
discussion. Yeah, well, and the other thing,
discussion,
I feel bad for the kid that got bounced out of playing, you know, against Bo Hessler. You know, he played his way in there. And Zach Forche. So, never know.
We'll see. We instigate a lot of things here on Golf Talk America. Maybe we'll change the NCAA rule on that one. You never know. You never know what could happen. Hey, Brendan, thanks
so
much.
It's been a long
day for you, and catching that red eye and everything. We appreciate you staying up early to talk to us, and now you can go home and get a little bit of sleep, okay?
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. Thanks for the support.
Okay.
Hope you guys have a great Memorial Tournament, and look forward to talking to you soon.
All right, there is Brendan Sweeney with French Lick Resort. Check it out, FrenchLickResort.com in southern Indiana. Beautiful, beautiful resort there in Larry Bird's hometown. That great golf courses. You can do everything. You can gamble. They have a casino there. You name it, they've got it at French Lick Resort. Okay, top of the hour, quick timeout. We're going to come back, and we'll be talking with Terry Kaler. He is the CEO of Hogan Golf Equipments. They've been reborn. And if you haven't heard much about what's going on, you're going to stay tuned and listen in and find out what's going on with Hogan Golf Equipment. It's all coming your way here on Golf Talk America, so stay with us. And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews in with you this morning. And again, keeping an eye on the leaderboard, what's going on at Memorial. We'll get you back to the update. Three guys at the top at 800 par, and the first round leader, Dustin Johnson, opening with a 64 yesterday, has yet to tee off. He has a few hours yet till he tees off in the second round. Weather conditions are pretty good out there, so we'll keep you updated on what's happening there. Spieth and McIlroy also yet to tee off here in the second round of the Memorial Tournament presented by Nationwide. With us now is Terry Kaler. I'd like to welcome him to the show. He is the CEO of Hogan Golf Equipment, a company that a lot of us have heard about for years and years and years when Ben Hogan obviously started it decades ago. And it's recently kind of gone through different transformations. But Terry, for lack of a better term, has brought it back from the dead and rejuvenated the brand. And he is with us now. Terry, thanks so much for being with us today.
That's my pleasure, Tim. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, so let's first of all start from the beginning. Why bring back Hogan Golf Equipment? What was your impetus for getting this this company and this brand back on the shelves, back in the marketplace?
Well, it came really from several directions, Tim. One is, you know, I look at the long history that I've had in my life with Ben Hogan and the Golf Equipment Company and people that work with us. And, you know, I'd watch the industry just talking distance. Everybody's, you know, just oohing and aahing about how far everybody hits the golf ball. And the game is really a game of accuracy and precision. And if you hit it 2 feet from the hole, nobody really cares whether you did that with a club with an 8 on the bottom or a 4 on the bottom or, you know, what brand it was. And we felt like bringing a lot of this distance technology into the irons category specifically really was not serving golfers from the research we did and the interviews we did. Golfers want to hit the ball closer to the hole with their irons, and people, I think, have accepted my distance profile is probably maxed out. It's probably as good as it's going to get unless I go to the gym or take lessons. And, you know, what we're trying to do is optimize players' skill level that they have and they want to develop. You know, Mr. Hogan defined precision and accuracy of striking a golf ball, and we felt that. So part of it was what we saw as an opportunity and a need in the golf equipment marketplace to really focus on precision and accuracy. And the other side of it was we watched, you know, the industry's gotten beat up a lot with the, you know, from the business aspect, and we talked to golf professionals and retailers and golfers, and we felt like a set of business practices that Ben Hogan always adhered to, and very forthright, very dignified, you know, fair level playing field for everybody. We felt like that would really be received well in the marketplace, and we had a lot of golf pros tell us kind of the third angle is golf needs Ben Hogan. The golf equipment industry needs the Ben Hogan company, and that's very flattering, and it's very honoring. And so those was a convergence of all those things.
And when you guys build clubs now and people look at a set of irons from Ben Hogan Golf, they are obviously different. First of all, they're beautiful, as I think all Hogan clubs have been. And we were talking before during the break, first set of clubs I owned were Hogan Apex 2s, as a lot of people owned their first sets of clubs back in the day if they're old enough, and they had Hogan clubs. They're always beautiful clubs to look at, and they continue to be, and you guys have brought them back, but they don't have the typical 6-iron, 7-iron, 8-iron number on the clubs. Explain what your reasoning was. Instead, you have the degree of loft that's on each club. And explain how that comes about and how people, you have to get these clubs fitted because everybody hits a different club, a different length. And it is about the precision you're talking about so that it's not just an off the rack kind of a club manufacturer. These are made for people that are serious about the game. And the loft is much more important than saying you hit a 7-iron. It really depends on what degree you need to be hitting that club, correct?
Well, yeah, we looked at, you know, a couple things. First, to the comment about the appearance, Mr. Hogan always made the comment about a golf club should be like a fine piece of jewelry. And so, you know, a golf club's appearance is very important. I mean, it builds confidence and gives you personal pride in what you play. But the reason we went to building clubs in every loft was twofold. One is the industry's chase for distance has compressed our clubs at the long end of the set. So in a typical set of irons today, you have the 3, 4, 5, and 6 go from 20 or 21 degrees to 28 or 9 degrees. So the first four, half of your set only covers 8 degrees from 20 to 28, and the next four have to get you from there all the way out to 44, 45, 46 degrees. So golfers are getting compressed yardage differences, if any differences at all, at the long end of their set, and they're getting these wider distance gaps at the short end. And that doesn't make any sense for scoring. So what we did is basically said you can replace that 7-iron set, I mean that 8-iron set, 3 through pitch, with a 7-club set to get you the same spread of loss from 20 to mid-40s, you know, 45 degrees. And we open the gapping back up to 4 degrees. And you look at most modern iron sets, there's 2.5 to 3 degrees between your long irons, and there's 4 and even 5 degrees now between your short irons. Well, it makes no sense. The short irons is where you need more distance control and distance accuracy. So by building clubs in every loft, we can do a couple of things. We can regap the set, give you constant 4-degree gapping from your longest iron to your shortest, and it allows us, to, more importantly, or as importantly, to build in either our Fort Worth or our PTX iron, we build four distinctly different launch profiles. So at 4-degree gapping, if I want the lowest launch profile, I go from 20 to 44 degrees. If I want the highest launch profile at the same length shafts, I'm going to go 23 to 47. I have two more launch profiles in between it. When we talk about launch profile and driver fitting, that's the driving force is to optimize your launch profile. Well, why wouldn't we want to do that in irons? So without getting into the engineering of the individual club head, which is another big story, by building these, we can call the club what it is. It's a 23-degree club, a 37-degree club, and it doesn't have an arbitrary 6 or 7 or 9 on the bottom. And if you look at that, because there are no standards in our industry, you know, in any given manufacturer's lineup that across a range of 5 or 6 iron models, you can see a club with a 7 on the bottom range from 29.5 to 34 degrees. Well, what's a 7 then, if it can be anything? So it's a really, it's a disruptive way. But we all know the lofts of our wedges. We buy our wedges specifically to get our gapping. We play a 52, 56, 60, or a 50, 54, 58, or whatever it is. We do that with purpose. We buy our driver by loft with purpose, and then we tweak it with the hosel to get it within a half a degree of exactly where we want it. We know the lofts of our fairway woods and probably our hybrids. Most people don't know the loft of their 8-iron or their 5-iron. Well, what sense does that make? Let's call a club what it is. You know, bear in mind, 90 years ago, people were asking, well, okay, this 7, which one of these is my mashie? Which one is my niblick? Which one is my spade mashie? And so, you know, every 90 years or so, maybe we need an upgrade.
And that's what you're doing. Terry Kaler is with us. He's the CEO of Hogan Golf Equipment. Still in Fort Worth, or back in Fort Worth, I guess, appropriately enough, back in the hometown for Ben Hogan. And right now you're specializing and featuring the wedges. You have the TK wedges. You have Fort Worth irons, a few different sets of irons for a little bit more forgiveness for some people. And you've come out with hybrids. We, so far, or up till now, Hogan doesn't have any irons or fairway metal woods. And that's all part of a phasing for you, that you're kind of slowly but surely getting a full set of clubs that will be coming out from Hogan?
Well, you know, we like to refer to ourselves as the only 60-year-old startup ever. You know, we've got this legacy brand and a tremendous amount of great history in club making. But, you know, as a new entity, we're only 2 years old, less than 2 years old. We knew that a pure forged blade and wedges would be our first product. We think there's a huge opportunity to help golfers with their wedge game. Nobody talks about forgiveness in wedges. We believe we make the most forgiving wedges in the game. That high face shot that doesn't go anywhere, we fixed that. We give you better trajectories. And you look at wedges that really haven't changed much in 40 years. The Players Blade, that's a Hogan Legacy Club. Our new Fort Worth takes that kind of golf club to a new height. Because Hogan always was focused around irons, we created our second iron, the PTX, which is a pack full of exciting technologies. Hybrids, that's kind of an option at the long end of the set, option to long irons. We look at hybrids as an iron replacement that's supposed to go a certain distance with a higher degree of confidence and regularity. We have a lot of things on the drawing board in the club category. You mentioned drivers, fairways. We in the back of our minds, we think about putters. We think about golf from tee to hole. And then accessories and who knows what all we'll be into. I mean, it's a building process. We don't really have a time frame that we have to have a driver by this and we have to have fairway woods by that. We're working on things, and when something rises to the top is really extraordinary, then we'll move that product on through the production process. But we aren't sitting here telling you I'm already working on 2017 or 2018, and we don't think of it that way. We think of it, can we do something with a driver that nobody else is doing, that a sizable enough group of golfers would go, that's what I want out of a driver that I'm not getting, or a fairway wood. That's what we did with our irons. So that's what drives our product development, is there a need to a sizable enough piece of the golfer population that we can go address that need? We're a boutique niche kind of company, and I think Hogan always was, at an extremely loyal following, but that Hogan player is a serious golfer. It might be a 12 handicap, might be a 16, might be a scratch tour player, but that Hogan player has a little different relationship with the game, we found.
We're talking with Terry Kaler, who's the CEO of Hogan Golf Equipment. We were talking, you and I, back during the Colonial at your factory, and you were saying that, in Ben Hogan's opinion, a sand wedge and certain clubs were supposed to only do so much, and yet today's players, we see Jason Day hitting his sand wedge from 135 yards sometimes, and it's kind of crazy what these guys can do with different clubs. But that wasn't really Hogan's philosophy, was it? That let's take clubs and swing the heck out of them, because certain clubs are made to be hit certain positions on the golf course, as well as places on the face of the club. So what today's players are doing, although if it works, it works, and nobody's going to say do otherwise, but it's not exactly the way Ben Hogan looked at the game of golf, or the way equipment was for the average golfer, right?
Well, Ben Hogan, I mean, everybody knows he defined precision. He achieved things with the golf club and shot-making precision that, there are just stories after stories of, the 1960 U.S. Open at 48 years old, he hit the first 34 greens in regulation and spun the ball back off of the 35th. And, I mean, nobody hits the ball with that kind of command anymore. And those golfers went at it a lot less aggressive than the modern player. And that, you bring up a good point. So the modern driver allowed the modern physical approach to the game of really hit it as hard as you can. You can't do that with a persimmon golf club because the misses are so penalizing. And, the modern player, somewhere around the center of the face, you're going to get the results you after, so you can swing it as hard as you want. Same with cavity back irons and fairways, hybrids, et cetera. But the way, and so the equipment changed, and along with the technique, as equipment became more forgiving, the technique became more powerful and less focused on having to make exact, precise impact. But in our wedge category, go peel the chrome and the graphics off of a 2016 wedge from almost any company and go compare it to a 1950s model or a 60s model. That golf club has not changed. And Ben Hogan said a sand wedge was maximum 40 yards because he knew the smash factor around that golf club's face was not consistent. So when you hit it high in the face, it wasn't going to go anywhere. And you hit it low in the face, it's going to be a heater. And we took wedges and go, why can't we do with wedges what we're doing with drivers and irons, and that is make them very forgiving so you get consistent trajectory, consistent distance. When you hit it three grooves high or three grooves low or a little on the toe or heel, and we're just extraordinarily proud of what we've done with wedges because we've made them deadly accurate and forgiving, and nobody really has done that in the category. In the wedge category, this is wedges. And so Ben Hogan said the maximum distance for a sand wedge was 40 yards, but maximum distance for a driver is 300. So it wasn't like he couldn't hit it further. He just knew it wasn't a reliable tool when you swing full.
And Terry, when people want to get Hogan clubs, want to know more about it, first you can give us a website so people can check it out and look for themselves at all the beautiful clubs you guys make. But if they want to get a set of Hogan clubs, what would they need to do?
Well, on our website, there's a link called Hogan Fit. We're actually just introducing, and that's evolving to be the online performance center. it takes a golfer first. Let's look at your bag right now. Let's look at a gapping analysis, a loft analysis. We're going to give you a more insightful look at what's really in your golf bag than you've ever seen before. And then from there, you know, we can, if you want to look at how we would readdress your wedges or your irons or your hybrids or all of that, you can take these different pathways to the Performance Center. And we're going to prescribe the loft matrix that's probably going to fit your launch profile. You know, we can compare your specifications on your current clubs to our standard specifications, because in the golf industry, lofts and lies and links are all over the place. So we have a reconciliation. Our tool, this online experience, is backed by a database of thousands of sets of irons that have been made in the last 30 years. So we can go analyze what's in your golf bag. And you know, it's an analysis. We call it a bag mapping analysis, and let you know exactly kind of what your toolbox looks like. And from there, what a rebuild might look like. And then we encourage people to call us. We've got PGA professionals on the phone. Our golf club specialists are the best in the business, we believe. They can talk turkey with you about, you know, what you're trying to achieve in your golf game.
Well, they're beautiful clubs. I've seen them personally. I've held them in my hand. Haven't hit with them yet, but I plan to do that soon. And congratulations for the success in less than 2 years and continued success, Terry. I know, as you said, it's an evolving company. And I like the fact that you don't actually have specific goals. You're like, we'll see when it's ready. And when it's ready, we'll move to the next phase and do the next thing. Right now, you guys are making beautiful irons, wedges, and hybrids. And I encourage people to go to the website. It's benhogangolf.com. You can go to benhogangolf.com. Heck, just Google Ben Hogan. You'll get all the information you want and probably learn a few things about Ben Hogan that maybe you didn't even know. Terry is a wealth of knowledge. And next time we talk to you, Terry, we'll go into the depths of some of your Hogan stories, because nobody seems to have more history in their head about Ben Hogan than Terry does. So appreciate the time, Terry. Thanks so much for talking with us, and best of luck, continued success with the Hogan Golf Equipment Company.
Well, thanks, Tim. You know, we've got U.S. Open coming up at Oakmont, which is, you know, where Mr. Hogan won in 1953 when he won the Masters, the Open, and U.S. Open and the Open Championship. And so may we come back on and tell some Hogan stories. Nobody commanded the U.S. Open like he did, and a lot of people don't know that from 1940 to 1960, Ben Hogan finished in the top 10 of every major he played in for 20 years. Pretty extraordinary streak of high performance golf, huh?
Just one sample of the genius of Terry Kaler right there. Just one sample of what he can bring to us when we talk about Hogan. And we'll do it next time, Terry, when we have a little bit more time. Thanks so much. And again, continued
Thank
success.
Thank you, Tim. Always a pleasure.
Right. You take care. Bye. Terry Kaler, CEO of Hogan Golf Equipment. And he does know an awful lot about Ben Hogan, but he knows a lot about making clubs. And again, I encourage you to take a look at their website, benhogangolf.com, and check out their clubs. Find a fitter. They have different fitters all around the country that you can go to, and it's all about precision. And the clubs are reasonably priced. I mean, they're not the lowest end, certainly, but they're certainly far from being the most expensive clubs you can get. But if you're serious about your game, and I think most people are, whether you're a 30 handicap or a scratch, you're serious about your game, you want to play better, it really pays to have the right clubs and right equipment in your hands. So check it out. Take a look at that. By the way, that's a phenomenal stat that he threw out there. For 20 straight years, Hogan never was outside of top 10 in a major that he played in. For 20 years. Think about that. I mean, in today's world where guys are lucky to make 10 straight cuts, for 20 years, he never was outside of the top 10. Give you one final look at the leaderboard here before we say goodbye. And Brendan Steele has taken the lead. He has gotten a birdie at number 12. He is now 9 under early, well, through 12 holes in the second round of the Memorial Golf Tournament. He is at 9 under. Emiliano Grillo is 3 under on his round. He's now at 8 under, along with Dustin Johnson, who is yet to tee off. Adam Hadwin had gotten it to 8 under. He has fallen back to 7 under with a bogey on number 10. So that's a look in the early part of the second round of the Memorial Golf Tournament presented by Nationwide. Thanks to everybody for being with us today. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Thanks to Brendan Sweeney with French Lick Resorts for joining us, giving us an update on the NCAA Men's Golf Tournament. And certainly Terry Kaler, CEO of Hogan Golf Equipment, for updating us on the very latest reincarnation of the Ben Hogan Equipment. That'll do it for us. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. We do appreciate it. For Frank Bassett, Bobby Raymond, I'm Tim Matthews, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Golf Talk America.